Welcome to the Reading Revolution, powered by BookVending.com. I'm your host, Josh Gregory. We've got a great episode for you this week, mixing food for the body with food for the mind. We're headed to New York City. The Reading Revolution starts now. Are you ready to embark on an adventure through the world of words? Join us on the Reading Revolution, and let's explore the exciting world of literacy together. Teresa, how are you? Welcome to the Reading Revolution. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
I am great. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to do this.
And so are we. So are we. Can you talk a little bit about your background before Grandma's Love and before we get into the nuts and bolts of the organization?
Sure. I'm a mom of three daughters, all grown with families of their own. I have five grandchildren. I have a degree in education, so I've taught pre-K, kindergarten, little ones, daycare. I've also been in law enforcement. I was a New York City corrections officer for a bit. I was an insurance broker for a while. I have a very, very broad background. I even mixed auto body paints and sold flooring tiles to hospitals. there's a lot of loose information upstairs, but it's all good because it comes in handy.
I was just going to say, you know, having that varied background when you're starting a nonprofit organization, it's good to know a little bit about everything, I would assume.
Oh, absolutely. It made getting insurance easier. When we're looking at new spaces, it makes that easier because I know what I'm looking for and what I'm looking at. I'm very happy about my background and how much it helps with Grandma's Love.
So coming from the educational world and working in a number of different schools in the New York City area, what were you seeing that would eventually lead to doing a little bit more than just providing meals and that sort of thing for kids in, you know, lower income households and kids in need?
You know, it's really difficult when you go into a kindergarten classroom and a five-year-old child cannot even recognize their own name. That's a little disheartening because it means that there's been no foundation laid before the age of five. So starting at five, it doesn't make it impossible, but it is a little bit harder for both teacher and child. But they get there with a lot of work. They do get there, but there's a lot of catching up to do. And I realized how important literacy is, and not just giving out a book, but the entire program of it. Children not only need to know how to read, but they really have to comprehend and be able to give back what they read. So, you know, they understood it, they can retell it, they can rewrite it. And, you know, going into different classrooms of different age groups, you see how important it is for their future, not only ours, but theirs.
And when did the literacy component of Grandma's Love start kind of joining forces with providing meals and that sort of thing for the kids in need?
The idea of the literacy, the book vending machine itself, was hatched back in 2017. It didn't become a reality until I think 2020, 2021. I was coming back from Georgia and happened to see one in an airport in Georgia. And I was like, that's perfect. And then I couldn't find them. And a volunteer of mine found them. And I was like, yes, that's it. And we just started, you know, placing the machines around and putting the books in there. But now, you know, when we're at the sites filling the machines, we actually interact with the children. We talk to them. And the hospital and school staff comes back to us and tells us about the excitement that these children have when they see this machine, when they're able to get a free book and keep it, take it home. So that's when that came about. You know, we originally just started giving out books to four-year-olds, in different classrooms. And then we decided we needed to do more than that. There are children in hospitals, children in underserved communities. Books are very expensive and it's difficult for some parents. You know, you decide food, books. So we complement the both. We feed you your body and we feed your mind.
And I love that. I love that. The way to be able to say that is, yes, your body needs nourishment, but your brain does just as much. and
Exactly.
doing great work with there. So take me back.
This machine and how much we wanted literacy to be a big component of ours. They sent me to Brooklyn Law School, and I approached the school, the professor in charge. I explained what I wanted. We sat down, had a conversation, and they actually helped me write my 501c3 for both food and literacy. And then I wrote my bylaws, and it all got hatched. And believe it or not, it only took 3 months, which was almost unheard of. It's usually about a year to get your 501. And I had it in 3 months. And I was sitting in a classroom when someone from home texted me the letter. And I was like, oh my God. And the professor's like, now what? And he said, I got it. I got my 501. And she went, no way. And I showed her the phone and she goes, you actually got it in 3 months. So we were really ecstatic about becoming an official 501c3.
In the process for all of that, you know, I know nothing about how to start those foundations. And I don't think I'm alone when I say that. You know, obviously a process that you just mentioned is not something that happens overnight. What kinds
No.
of things did you have to take into consideration, knowing that there are probably other nonprofits out there doing similar work, but not necessarily exactly what your vision was?
I needed to know exactly what my mission was going to be. And I needed to make sure that my mission was not small. It wasn't limited. With their help, we wrote it very broad. And we wrote it for the 5 boroughs of New York City. We've actually gone a little bit beyond the 5 boroughs. We're now into Long Island, which is like the Queens, Long Island border. So we're teetering on both, Nassau and New York City. So you need to know what you want to do, how you want to do it, who's going to help you do it, and where's the money going to come from? I wasn't prepared for any of that. Actually, I figured I have a whole year. We'll just write it. We want to give food to, kids in need. We want to give out books throughout New York City. We have a whole year to actually figure it out. Well, we didn't. And I only had 3 board members at that time. And it was like, okay, we need to now like move on this. And we did, but we had a lot of help. We had a lot of help from the college. I had help from some of the other organizations in my community, giving me directions, telling me how to apply for grants, because that's something I had never done in my life. And we kind of winged it at the very beginning, trial and error. Well, this didn't work. Let's do it this way. This worked great. Let's expand that. And that's what it takes. You really need a community of friends to bounce ideas off of and get information.
Do you think being in that kind of a position where you think you've got all this time, but it turns out you're really not going to have all that time, maybe helped out with the success of the organization? And number one, the ideas to take on different approaches or different ideas that maybe you wouldn't have considered with more time to think about things. And also having that not necessarily pressure or necessarily pressure, but just that inkling that, we do have to get moving here. We're also going to cut out some of the fat that maybe we would have gotten bogged down with.
That's very true. When you don't have a lot of time to think about something, you actually focus on what your mission is and what's really important and getting it done and how quickly can we start this and move. When you have a lot of time, it's like, no, I don't like that idea. Let's do this. No, this one sounds better. And you kind of lose yourself in all the, well, what ifs. When you're limited, you go in, you attack and you do it and you keep trudging through. There's a lot of ups and downs. There's a lot of times you have a multitude of money and then one day it's like, uh-oh, we're kind of really low on funds. Now what? And then you figure that out really quick. So not having a lot of time, I think, was really crucial for Grandma's Love.
And I liked how you mentioned that you try something. Does it work? Or maybe we won't do that next year. Or how can we, fix what we might have been able to do a little bit better? That's also got to go into a healthy plan of how to move forward.
It does. It does. And you know, when you have a good board of directors and an executive board behind you, it makes those tasks much easier because you're not alone and you're not making all the decisions. You have people weighing in and giving you different perspectives on something you thought may have been great. And someone said something, you go, oh, yes. Yeah, we can't do that. All right. How can we do it, but do it differently? So I think I'm really lucky. I have a great board of directors. Two of my board of directors have been with me since day one. So that's 10 years. It's phenomenal. It's really great.
I'm glad you bring that up because I wanted to talk a little bit about how the organization is made up of and the types of folks that are serving on your board. If you could talk a little bit about the experience that they're bringing in from their backgrounds and how all that comes together to make a successful team.
Well, our board is very eclectic. We have an accountant. We have a corporate attorney. We have a businesswoman who's a coach. Let's see, we have a stay-at-home mom, grandma, who's been with me since day one. We have a real estate, an insurance person who is actually part of another foundation who helps grandma's love. We have a printer. We have an estate attorney. So we have quite a few, and we have a cardiac thoracic PA on our board. And all of those things together help with the food, the nutrition, the fundraisers, and different experiences that we can provide for children.
And now that we've talked about a strong leadership, can you talk a little bit about the volunteer side and the day-to-day operations? But let's start with the volunteers. Where do these folks come from, and how do they play a role in making Grandma's Love a success?
Well, they find us on Facebook. They find us through our website. They find us when we're out in the community, when we have our events. And they contact us through either a phone call or we have a contact us sheet on our website. One of my volunteers has been with me since she saw us on PIX 11 News. And she's been a tremendous help because she reaches out to various authors and asks them for donations of their books for our machines. And that is just amazing. She really works hard at that. But our volunteers are there. We just did, we participated with a community, a Third Avenue community bid, a business. We cleaned up, we planted flowers. So we have this, volunteers that come for that. When we do our different events, we do little events with kids throughout the community, and they come and help with that. So our volunteers are crucial. They get the word out. They talk to their family, their friends, and that's part of our success.
And I would also assume that the people who are receiving what you're doing look at these folks who are volunteering their time, realizing that these are members of their community. That's also got to have a pretty powerful statement that, we might be struggling, but there are folks right near us that are willing to help and then probably will turn into volunteers down the line as they grow old.
We actually, you would laugh. We actually started in one of our schools. Parents that were receiving our food packages were actually packing those food packages. It was a way of training them for a life skill so that hopefully, at some point they can get a job, whether it's, just in a supermarket or a grocery store, but it's a job and it's, life training. But yes, because you're not a client of Grandma's Love, and you're not a volunteer, so to speak, of Grandma's Love. You're part of the Grandma's Love family. And we're all here for the same reason. We're all here to help each other because it doesn't matter what side of the fence you're on. Things happen so quickly, our lives change so quickly. but at least we know that we have a family that's there for us.
You know, we've talked to a number of different folks from a lot of different areas on the reading revolution. And one thing that is pointed out by the educational folks that we have on is that literacy does play a role in the future years of folks who are either literate or illiterate. Those who don't know how to read are less likely to be involved in their community, less likely to be employed. So I think, you know, where you're hitting them at a young age, not just with, you know, food assistance, but also with, as you put it, you know, that food for the mind, that's going to leave a lasting impression, coupled with the fact that they see folks from the community rallying to their aid as well.
What's really nice is that our community, our families are made up of different cultures and different languages. And it's really nice that we can actually communicate with all of them, because we have an array of volunteers that do speak different languages. And somehow or another, I mean, I only speak Spanish and English, but somehow or another, those conversations go across the board. You know, there's a lot of hand movements and a lot of head movements, but they work. And, you know, it's really fulfilling when I'm walking, like in the Sunset Park community of Brooklyn, and somebody goes, "Abuela, grandma," you know, because they recognize me. Or even when I'm in my own community and I hear a kid yell out, "Grandma." No, I have no name. My name doesn't exist anymore. It's only Grandma. And that's really cool.
When you started with the Inchi Bookworm book vending machine, you mentioned that you saw it in an airport down south and then said, "Hey, we really want to get one of those." And you obviously have more than one of the, you know, the bookworm machines now in different locations. When you saw that, what was really the goal that you were thinking about? Okay, we've been giving books away, but now we want to incorporate this book vending machine. What was the vision with that? And how did that start? Was it just, were you thinking it's going to be in one location, or were you thinking we need 10 of these things?
Oh, I was thinking, the first thing was like, okay, how do we pay for this? I want it. How do we pay for this? And, you know, you put things out in the universe and the donor starts to appear. And thank God they did. But it was never about one. It was always about how many can we get? How many, where can we put them? And I actually didn't think about schools at first. My original thought was hospitals, because kids go to visits and they're on a phone, they're on a tablet. And there's nothing wrong with technology. And I want to make that clear. However, when you give a child a book and they start to read and they can lose themselves, their imagination starts to go wild. Creativity starts to come out. There's nothing like that. And, you know, so to defray them from that phone and that iPad in a hospital visit was my original goal. You know, and then sometimes when they see the doctor, they're afraid, they're upset, they have to get a shot. That gold token is, it's like the carrot. It's like, but don't you want to visit the machine? Look, we can go pick a book. It's yours to keep. And yes, it's an enticement, but think about every time that child has to go to the doctor and that child knows that they're going to get a new book. And you know, it's free. They take it home. They keep it. It's theirs. The response from the hospitals has been amazing. Absolutely amazing. So we're pushing. We have only two in schools, two underserved communities, but we have seven in hospitals. And to my knowledge, we are the only nonprofit in New York City that is placing book vending machines in New York City hospitals. One of our hospitals wants to actually promote it to be in every New York City health and hospital there is. And so we'll be looking for a lot of donors.
What was that like when you first approached a hospital? Were they 100% open to it, or did it take a little convincing to actually see how the program was going to work?
They were actually excited because it was something new for their kids. And it was, you know, our reveal was really great. Staff was there, you know, news was there. It was wonderful, but the reaction of the kids was the best part. You know, putting that gold coin in and you know, choosing their own book. Nobody said, "Here, this is yours." It's like, which one would you like? You know, that makes a big difference in children. When children have ownership of things, it means much more to them than if someone just handed them something. So.
And really, traditionally, when we think about doctors, it's the lollipop or it's whatever they're walking away with. You're
No.
kind of totally
No.
transitioning away from that, giving something that is sustainable and is going to last, not only with the book that they have that will always remind them of that, but the mentality of, boy, reading is way much better than a sucker or something that's going to be gone in 15 minutes.
We put a machine in Staten Island University Hospital, the Florina Cancer Unit. It's now been moved to the new building that they built. So it's completely pediatric floor now. The response from the hospital was there had to be 25 people at that unveiling, along with the newspaper, the TV station, because they were so excited about this machine. The doctors are really, they're much happier. They love this idea.
No, we think it's fantastic too. And again, it's the majority of our machines, I would say, obviously, it's school with the PBIS programs and that kind of thing. But to have that vision of there's a whole other sector of kids who, if they're especially in their hospital stay, they need to be doing something that stimulates their brain instead of just watching a movie or having something told to them.
Right. And we put journals. We've begun to put journals in a lot of our machines because we realized that there are older kids who may want to track their experience, but we actually are putting them in there with the hopes that parents will take one and journal, you know, like journal their trip through sadly their child's cancer you know, life. And all of the ups and downs, but it's a memory that with this machine can be a happy memory at times because they'll be able to write the good times and you know, all of the positive experiences and keep that. So and you know, hopefully that child can take that memo and do some philanthropic work with it going forward as they get older.
And I love how you bring up the idea of the family where I might have mentioned just the patient, but you know, the book really does also offer a family activity during a hospital stay or you know, a hospital visit, whatever it might be. It's not just handing off a book to a child. It's the idea that there's going to be reading with the parents, and it's going to be an activity that they're going to share together. And that just solidifies the importance of literacy when it becomes a family affair and not just, I'm going to be reading books on my own.
Correct. And a lot of our books are dual language. We may have English Spanish books or Asian, you know, Chinese English books. Various different cultures and languages are displayed in our machine. We try to represent as many different you know, people in New York and visitors that we can. It's not just about your traditional English reading book. So a lot of people are representative, and that makes families feel good. It also allows them to go home and read to their child because if a Hispanic mom cannot read English, she now has a book that she can read in Spanish and a child can read it in English. So they're going to teach each other. So these machines have created so much more than just a coin and a book.
When you brought that up, you know, with again the whole idea of it being, you know, this family affair and having to stay, you know, get these different kinds of books. Where are you getting the books, and how has that part of the program been so successful and something that's sustainable when you are not just throwing any old book that you might get as a donation?
Well, first of all, only brand new books go in all our machines. That's an absolute must. Okay. We do take used books. We do give them out freely in communities, but the machines only have new books. So we try to find donors that will help us defray the cost of those books. And we have a few. But there's a group called First Book that allows us to purchase various books. We actually pay for shipping and not the book. But we also have a local bookstore that we work with in Bay Ridge. And it's called the Bookmark Shop. And Christine has been absolutely a gem with us. She supports us wholeheartedly. I'll walk in and pull 200-300 books off our shelves, or I'll send her a list. Can you order these for me? Christine and her staff are phenomenal. They really are. We have schools that sometimes will do a book drive and donate some new books, especially if they're doing like a book fair. You may get a few kids or a few parents to buy some books and donate them back to us. And that's what we do. We hold book drives in our local bookstore. So we kind of really like beg a lot. Please, we need new books. Help support us. But so far, thank God, we've been able to do our best with our non-machines.
And it's amazing what you can accomplish by just asking. We recently had a young man from Southern California who wanted to bring a book vending machine to his former middle school and elementary school. And, you know, he found the power of just looking for help and asking. You'd be surprised at how many folks will get behind a cause like this, because it is just right. And it just fits for every community, no matter where you are.
It does. And there are things that people do not think of that actually was brought to our attention. And that was donating machines to organizations in memory of. Two of our machines are in memory of two young ladies that passed away from childhood cancer, and they're in two different locations. Another community member, Bay Ridge is very diverse. Oh, I'm sorry, I lost you. Okay, sorry, I touched my computer.
No, you're okay. I still have you. You're still here. Okay.
Bay Ridge is very diverse. But the basis of Bay Ridge is a Catholic religion. So during the Easter season, there's 40 days of Lent. It's 40 days of giving of yourself, basically. So one of our members did a 40-day challenge. She raised enough money to purchase a machine, fill it with books. It hasn't gone out yet. We're in conversations with NYU Hassenfels Children's Hospital in the city. On the machine is a book that opens up and a butterfly comes out of it. And along the pages of the book on the bottom, it says in memory of and a person's name. And that'll be the wrapping on this new machine. So there's a lot of ways that this machine is also a legacy to one person, to many people. So there's a lot of ways to be able to reach out, get funding for the machine, get funding for the books. And I have to tell you that whenever we get funding for books from someone, inside that book is a label that says, this is a gift for you from grandma's love and or in memory of. And that's what we give. So everyone, every child will know where that book came from. And they'll never forget us. And hopefully they'll look us up in the future and they'll want to give back in one way or another. It's about creating young philanthropic adults.
And at the risk of turning this into a commercial, which I don't want to do, but I will mention, because you talked about, you know, the customization of the machines, the way that they can be wrapped. You know, the world is your oyster when you have an inchy bookworm machine. Did that play a role in, you know, the ease of use and the way that you were able to get the machines into the different hospitals and different neighborhoods that you're working with?
It does, because although we usually have one standard wrapping that reflects us, we do send, have customized various wrappings that we use. And it does, because like we put one in the Children's Cancer Hospital in Long Island, Cohen's Children's Hospital, and it is in memory of a child. And when parents go there, they know that this machine is not there to sell grandmas. It's not there to publicize grandmas. It's there because a family cared enough to work with us to provide a gift for the ch other children that come and visit.
You know, I know that's terrific. And I wanted to ask you just a couple of years ago, we're outside the pandemic now, but how did that affect the Operation of Grandma's Love and this program of food and literacy when, we all went through this insane time of lockdown? What was that period of time like for Grandma's Love?
That actually put us on the map, believe it or not. We teamed up with another organization in our community, and we were giving out over 600 bags a month to families all over the place in need. We did college students, which we normally don't do, but we did college students. We did, a lot of our families, of course, they were locked in. A lot of our families were sick. We did a door drop. But in every single bag that went to a household with children, there was a book or two in that bag. We still continued. I mean, at one point, we even gave out comic books because we got such a huge donation from someone of comic books. We just started putting comic books because reading is reading. And when you're locked in at home, and these kids weren't really spending the time on the computer they should have. At least they had something to entertain them, but they were actually learning while they were doing, being entertained.
It's interesting that, that's something that could have been, detrimental to a number of other organizations. Grandma's Love was able to kind of really step up and take, even more leadership in the community to
Yes.
really to not only continue the program, but to show everyone that you're not going anywhere anytime soon.
No, we're not. We're here for the duration. Grandma's love, I'm here to leave a legacy behind, a legacy of loving children, the importance of literacy, and the importance of helping others that are in need. Your next door neighbor may be hungry, even though they live in this big, beautiful house that they never purchased. It was given to them, it was handed down. But you think that everything is great, but inside those doors, they're struggling. So I want to keep that awareness going, way beyond me.
We talk about, leaving this legacy and these, ways that people can donate. Do you have large, kind of like, what's the way I want to word this? I don't want to say capstone because that's not the word that I'm trying to think of. We will edit this portion out, please, while I stumble through what I'm trying to say here. But do you have annual events or anything like that that are kind of like key things that happen every year?
We do. We actually have what we call a radio bingo. It's actually bingo to music, and the DJ comes in, and our guests have a blast. But we have raffle baskets, and so we do get funding through that fundraiser. And like I said, we do a lot of little things geared directly toward children. And although they don't bring in a lot of money at one time, when you add them up throughout the year, it's a substantial amount, but we do have those donors that really believe in us and will continually donate throughout the year, whether we do something or not.
So with Grandma's Love primarily focused on New York City, now you mentioned kind of branching out a little bit out into Long Island. Do you see that sort of growth continuing, or are you more comfortable kind of staying in, the neighborhoods that you're in right now?
As far as the food program goes, yes, we are very comfortable in the neighborhoods we're in, although there are a few more within New York City that we really should be in, but that comes with funding. The more funding we get, the more we can add, because our food program runs through the school system. Guidance counselors, administrators will call us, send us a list of names, and they've got the family's blessing that they will accept food. So we do that. We want to do more schools. We want to be in many more schools in underserved communities. When you leave New York City, it becomes a little harder because the laws are different. A new 501 needs to be written, and we may not fit into their communities because there's so much other help there. So we want to focus our food in the New York City area, absolutely. As far as our book vending machines, I don't have a problem with expanding that beyond New York City, because I think it's such a beautiful thing, and I think that many other hospitals will benefit from it. And, you know, we have one in mind. We recently lost a family member of a board member who was an educator. So I'm hoping that within the next year, we can possibly raise the funds to provide a machine to the school that she was teaching in so that the children would never forget her. It would be like her legacy to that community through us.
I think it's great that, you know, you mentioned that you want to leave a legacy, but it seems like in your desire to leave your legacy, you're encouraging others to do the same through the program that you've started and want to just continue on handing off and existing generation after generation.
I do because literacy plays a really big part in my life. I never liked to read as a kid. I would skim, you know, back in my day, we learned how to skim through the pages because reading just took too long. But I realized how much I lost because the creativity was never allowed to evolve. And then as I got older and I started reading, I'm like, wow, you know, I missed a lot. Especially when I start reading the children's books when I was teaching in the classroom, you start to act them out and so yes, I want to leave a lot. I want others to leave that literacy legacy behind.
And giving and helping others is so contagious. It just is so contagious. When people see things working, they want to be a part of that. And I think what you've got going on out there is just phenomenal. And the way that you've been able to reach out to hospitals and bring in folks that a lot of others might not have considered a place to put a book vending machine, what a great success.
It's really funny. I walk into a space and I go, ooh, it would look really nice right there. And then, like, especially in a hospital, you find out who's the child life specialist. And then the phone comes out and the picture comes out. And they're like, wow. And like, okay, I need to know, who do I talk to? And I mean, it starts immediately. And I'm relentless. I keep pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing till I get to where I need to be. And I get a yes.
Have you had other hospitals or organizations reach out to you to say, hey, we saw it over here, and boy, we really need it where we are?
We have, and sadly, one or two of them, they just didn't have the space. You know, it has to be in a space that the children are in. It has to be somewhere it can be monitored so it's not vandalized. You know, every machine that goes out with a contract, an actual legal contract, because we have to ensure, you know, the safety of those using it, that are in the area of it, our own safety. But we want to make sure that if anything happens to it, they're all contracted and insured. So the hospitals are almost free and clear because everything's on us. But, yeah, we have had a few, South Brooklyn Hospital. There was a doctor there. It used to be the old Coney Island Hospital. Doctor there called us and said, I saw your machine. I want that. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, well, we need to find a donor. He goes, no, I need two. I said, okay, we need to find two donors. I said, do you know, understand how much these costs? And he's the gentleman who's like, they have to be in every public hospital in New York City. I said, okay, start working on those donors for me. So.
That's great. Can you talk a little bit about what's coming down the pipeline? We're getting into the summer months now. And what kinds of things that we can look to see Grandma's Love working on, and the projects, and you know, folks listening to this that want to get involved, what can they be expecting Grandma's Love to be doing?
Well, there'll be a lot of little days coming up. We have a brand new website that's going to launch probably by the end of May. So our events calendar will be up there. There'll be a lot of little community things, but we gear up for school for September. You know, we do the backpack, school backpack giveaway. And every year it's just more and more and more and more that's needed. We will begin to start planning out our Thanksgiving giveaway, believe it or not, because every family gets a turkey or an oven roasted chicken. It depends on their culture. A full bag of food and a full bag of Thanksgiving goodies. So we have to plan that out and gear up for that. And we do, we put up on Facebook and our website, somewhere between $30 and $40. It depends on the year and how strapped we know that people are, how the economy is. We'll feed a family of four. But with a multitude of donations, it will help offset that giveaway because there are a lot of families and a lot of turkeys to buy. So we are looking, you know, any corporations want to donate. We'd love to have food and turkeys. Food for the whole year would be great. But, you know, our books too. School starts in September and we jump right back in to those machines. And making sure they're stocked, because many of our schools close over the summer. So our food program kind of slows down quite a bit because our kids aren't on site and our food bags are picked up at our schools. But they do have our phone number. If they really, really, truly are in trouble, they know they can call us. We will provide, not a problem. But we do send them off with a hefty bag in June. You know, to at least ease some of the pain. But that's it.
And it's interesting how we started talking about launching Grandma's Love and you didn't have much time. And now that you're in the swing of things, how much time is really necessary to make sure the programs are run properly?
We really do need to take, July and August to sit back. You know, from January to June, we start to think about what we want to do for the new year. Mm-hmm. But then from July and August, we have to actually put the plans into motion, because no matter what you're doing, you're always 30 days ahead. So you need to actually focus on collecting donations 30 days before. So there is a lot of planning that needs to get done because we've grown so much. It's not just one or two schools or one machine. It's nine schools, nine machines, and a multitude of families. So there's a lot of planning and talking to people that takes place.
And what are the best ways to find you online? You mentioned a little bit of social media, but if you could, you know, tell us where you are and how folks can reach out to you, that would be wonderful.
We are on Instagram. We are on Facebook. But our website is www.grandmaslovinc.org. And those are the best ways to reach us. And if you Google us, you'll find us.
Great. Teresa, thank you so much for taking a little bit of time out of your day to tell us a little bit about more about Grandma's Love. It was wonderful talking to you. And hopefully we can do it again and continued
success. I would love to.
Yeah, continued success to you. It's a wonderful program. And again, we cannot thank you enough for being part of the Reading Revolution.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your support. And anything we can do to help the Reading Revolution, please let us know. We'd be happy to help.
Great. Thanks so much. I appreciate your time.
For more information about the Reading Revolution, please visit bookvending.com. If you would like to contact us or would like to suggest a guest, drop us a line at readingrevolutionpod@gmail.com. The Reading Revolution is hosted by Josh Gregory with technical direction from Thomas Crane and David Gagan. The podcast is produced by Jake Blumberg and Connor Russo. The executive producer is Jay Blumberg. Thanks again for watching and listening. We'll see you here again on The Reading Revolution, where literacy matters.